So he vanished from my sight. The Spirit moves in the choice of music often, including this morning, because I wanted to ask you if you've ever seen a deer, and I mean eye to eye, your eyes met. Have you ever had that experience? Several years ago in the winter, I was at our family cottage, and I was waiting for a friend to come for a cup of tea. Maggie is one of the senior staff in the National Office in Indigenous Ministry, and as I was getting the kettle to boil and so forth, I was looking out the kitchen window and a deer came right into the garden and quite close to the kitchen window, and our eyes met and then it darted away. And then Maggie's car pulled in. And when we got to the door, she said, "John, you look like you've seen a ghost." And I said, "Well, actually, I've just seen a deer." She said, "Tell me about that." Really interested. And I said, "Well, this is what happened, and it came and it met." She says, "I want to even show me where the hoof prints are in the snow, how close it got to the window." She said, "In my tradition, it's very significant when your eyes meet those of a deer. It's called a visitation, a visitation." She said, "It's a reminder to care for yourself and one another in Aboriginal tradition." Well, Jesus' friends were gathered on a beach 3 days after he had died, and they looked like they'd seen a ghost because they thought they'd seen him. They thought they saw him standing beside the fire, cooking a fish and inviting them to come and share it with them, to follow them, like they'd seen a ghost. Well, we know that Jesus was his first name, but Christ is not his family name. Christ means Messiah or anointed one, the one that we're waiting for. So this was one of the times in John's gospel we get that early understanding of how Jesus is risen. Jesus is risen in the body of Christ, the church. And so when our eyes meet one another, it can be a reminder to care for one another, to gather in his name, because Jesus is risen in the body of Christ, the church, a visitation. Well, as ever, it's good to be back at Lawrence Park this morning and sharing in this summer series with Eric and Alistair and Stephanie, among others. There's Stephanie. Today I do want to explore visitations, but this is not a sermon about funeral home visitations. Although I do have to offer this brief reflection as we head into this together. I was recently accompanying a family in the Kitchener-Waterloo area, and they had opted to have an open casket for a brief family time before they closed the casket and friends and family came to visit and then on to the church. And three teen grandchildren had never been in a funeral home, much less seen a body in a casket. But their parents said, "This is something we'll do together, and then we'll close the casket and your friends will come to give us support." Well, those three teenagers, I can still see them standing in the doorway, 17, 15, 13. They looked across a distance, not much farther than looking at Christina, saw the casket, looked like they'd seen a ghost. The 17-year-old had the car keys and said, "Let's get out of here." And they were gone until the next day. They were able to come back and be part of the funeral. And I realized that it just wasn't in their life experience to be seeing somebody who had died and trying to understand the ways in which they were still alive, like they had seen a ghost. Well, this is a sermon about the appearance stories in John's Gospel of Jesus raised from the dead by God and appearing among his followers. In the story read for us this morning by Rosemary, there they were gathered around a charcoal fire with an overwhelming catch of fish and an invitation to have breakfast with Jesus. "It's almost a communion narrative to come and eat with me," he says. Does this ring a bell for you? The appearance stories of Jesus, the risen Christ, are rooted really in one line from the gospel lesson this morning, and it is, they knew it was the Lord. They knew. And like Maggie's teaching about the visitation of the deer, when our eyes meet, it is as if to say, "I'm okay, and you will be too." It's those unspoken assurances. "I'm okay, and you will be too." An invitation to care for ourselves and each other because Jesus is risen. Well, as my contribution to this summer series of sermons, I admire Eric for tackling medical assistance in dying as part of his vocation in pastoral ministry. That was last week and the Sixth Commandment. And this summer we're treated to wonderful musical ministry by organ scholar Stephanie, among others, in Mark's absence on sabbatical. And 3 weeks from today, and I hope to be back with you, my friend Janet McLaren is going to talk about some of her vocational work in the L'Arche community, and I commend that reflection to you in 3 weeks. So in my soon 25 years in hospital ministry, I'm sometimes asked to reflect on some of the work that I do, and this seemed like a good morning to do that, and this was the text that I chose. I'm thinking back to Easter weekend, soon 20 years ago, actually a little more than 20 now, and I was working as a chaplain at the Vancouver General Hospital. Easter morning was especially memorable because the Vancouver School of Theology community had a sunrise service on the shores of the Pacific, and we climbed down right near Wreck Beach, the nude beach, but that's just a coincidence, a little farther over, and there was a fire burning with a fish on it. And it was as if Jesus had invited us to gather with him. And we read, and I remembered that gospel lesson, but I heard it in new ways that Easter morning, partly because of things that had happened that weekend. Visitations. And mindful with that brief story I told at the beginning and the stories I'm about to tell, we're walking on holy ground together. And I certainly don't mean to make anybody feel uncomfortable, but at the same time, it helps us to reflect on the reality of life and some of its pain and all of its hope. Good Friday morning began with a call from the coroner, which is not unusual in the work of a hospital chaplain, but this time it was the chief coroner on the phone, Dr. Larry Campbell, who later inspired the CBC television series Da Vinci's Inquest. Do you remember that program? Dr. Campbell was a lot more laid back than the character they created on the CBC, but it's interesting, that show then became Da Vinci's City Hall, partly because Dr. Campbell did go on to be the mayor of Vancouver, and now he is a federal senator. But on this Good Friday morning of the long weekend, a familiar voice startled me with his picking up my response to his call, and I said, "Dr. Campbell, I didn't expect to be talking to you on Good Friday morning." And he said, "Well, John, all the other coroners have young families, and I decided that they should be home for the weekend. So it's you and me." Huh. That's part of the reason I admired him so much, because he cared so much about his staff to take that long weekend call. And he said, "I have a particularly heavy call for you." He said, "I need you to go to the emergency room and meet the parents of a young man who was killed by a drunk driver last night. And I need you to take them down to the morgue because they want to see their son's body." I don't remember much about that long walk, except I can tell you it's a very long, sterile hallway. We had to walk to the end, of course, and back. But I do remember the parents talking about their son. In fact, in those tender times, few words are probably best, and the only phrase that's really helpful is, "Tell me about your son." And they did. And the last thing I remember the dad saying was he was 33 years old and he was a carpenter. He was 33 years old and he was a carpenter. On the morning of Holy Saturday, I was called to the ICU, to the waiting area, to sit with a parent, a mom in this case, of a young man who was in the ICU on a ventilator and was not expected to live. What was a bit eerie at a busy city hospital is she was the only person in a very large waiting room, and I can still picture her sitting in a chair that had big sides, and her back was against the one arm, and her legs were over the other arm, and it was as if she was holding an invisible loved one, although very visible to her. It reminded me of the Pieta sculpture, if you've ever had the privilege to see that. And again, I don't remember much about the conversation except her telling me her name. Because in the course of it, we really didn't get introduced. And I finally remembered to introduce myself by name and by role. And she just looked up at me plaintively and said, "John, my name is Mary. My name is Mary." From accompanying the parents of a 30-something carpenter, as Jesus was, to meeting a mother named Mary of a dying young man, it had already been a liminal few days of knowing the Lord in his compassion, of suffering with, and the privilege to come along some beside people. And Easter was still to come. Some say that when a loved one dies, they make a visitation, as if to say, I'm okay and you will be too. If you hear nothing else in the sermon this morning, be assured of that phrase, I'm okay and you will be too, in their voices. The most frequent versions of these visitations, and we do hear about them quite often in the hospital, are a very strong sense of a bright light, either beside us or around us. Sometimes the loved one is very plainly in view, and very rarely do they speak when they are seen. Their familiar voice is more often heard in a dream, and sometimes it takes the form of a telephone conversation. Does that ring a bell for you? That in a dream you seem to be calling them or you receive a call from them, and then their familiar voice is very clear, as if to say, I'm okay and you will be too. And sometimes these visitations don't come for quite a while after a death, and sometimes they don't come at all. And that's not to say that loved ones aren't okay, nor that they won't be, but sometimes visitations do happen, and they can be very comforting. On the eve of Easter Sunday, so this is the eve of Easter, Saturday night, 20 years ago, I'd planned to attend the vigil service at the Anglican Cathedral in Vancouver, which is well known for a very thoughtful liturgy, beautiful, inspiring music, a choir up in a balcony, church full, and the bishop inviting people to bring a bell to church. Because just before midnight, when the bishop lights the Christ candle and proclaims Christ is alive, people are invited to ring their bells. It's quite wonderful. Well, I had attended other years and was looking forward to entering into the Paschal Mystery. I'm actually a closet Anglican, so I was really looking forward to it. But I always knew to take a spot on the end of the pew. And sure enough, just as the prelude was sounding, so did my pager. And I went out into the narthex and called the hospital, and they said, how quickly can you come? And I arrived back in the emergency room where I'd met the parents of the carpenter and was guided to a room where two elderly women were together. One was lying in a bed, obviously unconscious, and the other had her hand and had a chair pulled up close beside her. And so I was able to pull up a chair beside the seated friend. And as the spirit moved, she started to tell me how they were on their way to the vigil at the Anglican Cathedral when one of them had a stroke and was brought to hospital. It was a remarkable God-sentence of reflecting we would have otherwise been together and now we were. And then the nurse stepped in and indicated that things were changing very quickly and anything that one needed to say to the other should be said soon. And I'll always remember with her free hand, the woman took mine and said, let's say the Lord's Prayer together. And so we did. And I must say, any time I hear those words, especially with just a few people gathered, I think of those two women. And as the patient breathed her last, I thought I heard a bell ring. Because Christ is alive. Let's sing. Number 158.